accession number 27312, Reel 5.
Ken Ryland, Reel 5. So you were saying, you know, you felt a bit unpopular out in your military police uniform.
Yes, but we didn't get any trouble from the soldiers or anything like that, you know. They were quite good.
And did you get any, would it have any benefits from wearing the uniform? Did you get looked after?
Oh, yes. When we were on patrol, of course, we had to go around the canteens as well. And you'd go in and see the manager or manageress and say, everything all right? And they'd say, oh, yes, fine, thank you. Stop and have a cup of tea and some, you know. So all free. So we used to do very well in that. And they were glad for us to go in because they knew we were around, you know. And there was some nice canteens there, you know, looked after the lads well. And we were on patrol. We had a big park there. And that's the first time I've ever been up and down steps in the jeep. Up to the park, and one night, this young lady came up to us, me and my partner, very depressed, very upset. And we had an idea, because she spoke in German, that she'd been raped. So we decided that we could do no further out there, so we took her back to the interpreter, and he took all down the particulars, and that meant a big job for me. Well, both of us. We took her back home again, and I of course sat with the interpreter to find out exactly what had happened, and she had been raped by someone in the signals, and she knew him quite well, where he was stationed and everything. And I had to get my reports, and you had to have it in triplicate in English, triplicate in German, and of course you had to go round to her house and take your notes down and come back. I can understand the police in this country saying there's a lot of paperwork. There is quite a lot of paperwork. But anyway, I got through it quite well, and they had an identification parade, and she'd picked this chappy out. But I was expecting a court-martial, but nothing ever happened. I never heard any more about it. No. The RSM did say to me one day, I made a very good job of the rape case. But he said, you only made one mistake. And I said, oh, what was that? He said, you never had her medically examined. And I said, well, I never thought about that. I was only a young soldier. I didn't know about those things. So that went off very well. And then another case we had was a chappy riding about in a jeep. And we thought, well, I wonder what he's up to. You know, he couldn't make it. Anyway, we stopped him. And he was Canadian. And we couldn't get a proper story off him, so we thought we'd take him back to the field security and see what they could do. So of course we carried Sten guns in those days, so we took him up to the field security office, and there were several there officers there, and I just stood guard, you know, and had I searched him, and I said no. So they searched him, and he had a revolver on him. And funnily enough, this field security chappy, he got hold of this revolver, and it went off, and the bullet went up into the ceiling. So it was ready loaded. And I didn't have anything more to do with it. They took over that case then. But apparently he was a deserter from the Canadian. Yeah. So that was another capture.
A lot of the Canadians deserted, didn't they, I'm told?
Yes, yeah. But he had his own Jeep and all, and he was having a fun time, really. And then it was just the patrols and the black market and all that, you know. And then Mighty Mob number came up, and they let 43 and 44 go together because there weren't too many. And
so you were demobbed from Dusseldorf, were you?
From Dusseldorf, yes.
Where did you actually have to go to be demobbed?
Well, I'll tell you how I went on the train. This particular morning, I had to be up early to catch the train. And going up to the train, I discovered that one of our sergeants was being demobbed at the same time. So when we got to the train, he said, "Where are you going?" And I said, "Well, I can't come in the sergeant's department." "Yes, you can," he said. "Put my overcoat on." So I came all the way wearing his overcoat. So I was a sergeant for coming home. And they had a canteen on the train, and the chappie from the canteen, carriage, came down and said the canteen was open, anyone wanted tea or anything like that. So I said to Freddie Webb, that was the sergeant, I said, "I'll go and get some tea and wads if you like, Fred." He said, "Yeah, all right." Well, when I got up to the canteen carriage, I see this other sergeant over there, and I thought, gosh, I went to school with him. And it was a chappie that was I went to school with from Brunswick. Yes, he was a sergeant in the clusters. And he said, "Where are you going?" I said, "Oh, Monday, Mom." He said, "So am I." So we came all the way home together. Yes, it was very nice to have company with somebody you knew, So we came back to Guildford. I was demobbed at Guildford.
And what was that process like?
Sorry?
What was that process like, being demobbed?
Well, you just had to go and collect. That night we stayed there, for the first night, and I was in the top bunk and Frank was in the bottom bunk. And next morning we had to go. You went through and picked up all your items, all your clothing and your hat, your shoes, and suit, and everything they could give you, there's something to carry it in. And then we had to find our way home then by train.
And what was it like?
You were given railway warrants, of course.
And what were your feelings on travelling home for the last time, coming out of the forces?
Oh, lovely. Lovely, lovely, yes.
You weren't sorry to leave?
No. No. I was glad to get home, back to Marion, my mother.
So you came back to Painswick. And yeah. What did you do straight away? Did you have a rest or did you go to work or?
Oh, no. I had, on this, on my demand book, it says here. Oh. I can't find that. Ah, here we are. Overseas leave. Personnel will be notified directly from War Office or Records Office the extra leave to which they are entitled for overseas service. So we got, and I had a lot of overseas service, as you can imagine, being in the maritime. So my demob leave, this was November when I was demobbed, went through the demob centre. November, I got their stamp on here. 20th of November 1946. And when I worked out my leave, it lasted until March 1947. So I thought, well, this is all right, I was getting paid up until then. But I got fed up before then. I started work before, you know, really.
And what work did you do?
I got a job in a factory to start with. It was I was a machine setter. I'd never seen a machine in my life. But I soon got the hang of it, you know, and I was there for some time. And then eventually we got married, and we lived in rooms in Dunbridge. It's near where the wife's parents were. And we did so badly want a house of our own. But you see, in those days, you couldn't get a dog kennel, let alone a house. Everything. If there was a house empty at all, the squatters were in, it was just hopeless. It was nowhere. So I saw an advert in the paper. Gardener wanted with cottage. So I talked it over with Mary, and I said, what about it? It's a chance of getting a house, although it's tied. So I put in for it, and I went for interview. And got the job. Yeah. And it belonged to a colonel and his wife. And they said, now, can you possibly put some furniture in and some curtains up quickly? Because she said, the squatters know, they'll be in. We should lose it. Because you couldn't turn squatters out. So I said, yes, yeah, certainly. So with our two mothers... sorting out things, we managed to get some items to go in there, and we couldn't furnish it properly at that time, you know, but we did the best we could. And then I had to give notice in for the factory, like you say, and I finished there. And then bought what we could, but you see, in those days, everything was still on ration. We were unfortunate getting married at that time, because people couldn't give us anything, because, I mean, all the bedding and all that sort of thing, which we'd be glad of, they had to give coupons for. And we applied for extra coupons as we were getting married, you see. We were allowed extra coupons. But, of course, they didn't go very far.
No. So you worked as a gardener?
Yes, yeah. It was a sort of market garden. They sold a lot of their produce.
Right.
Yeah.
And did you stay there for long? Was that the career you had?
No. I stayed there for about 2 years, I think. And... I got on very well there, because they had 1, 2, 3, 4 greenhouses, and I worked under the... There was a head gardener,
right,
and an odd handyman as well.
Yeah, okay. Sorry, we better not have too much detail here, because the war's over and you're out of the services. I'd be interested to know, though, what job you ended up doing. What did you make your career at?
Well, I left there after about 2 years, because my aunt was working at a Castle Godwin in Painswick. And she said, the chauffeur gardener is leaving. Would I like the job, you see? And you know, I was always interested in driving. So I applied for it, no problem. And well, I said to the lady, she was a widow, I haven't got a driving licence, I said, but I can drive. But that's where I slipped up, you see. If I'd gone to our MTO when I left the army, and I could have got a chitty off him and got my, you know, my driving licence. So... she said, oh, I'm sure you'll pass. So, I had to go for a driving test. The only driving school in those days was the BSM. And I got in touch with them. And I said, well, what I want is a car to pass my test in. I said, I can drive. And he said, well, I'm sorry, we can't do that, but if you'd like to take a refresher course and then have your test, that would be all right. So I said, well, that'll have to be. So that was it. And now, of course, I passed my test.
Right.
And then I was able to, I was a gardener, chauffeur, everything there, because that had a farm onto it as well. And I had to check all the bills and everything that come in. So I was like an estate foreman there.
Yeah, that's it. So when you left the forces, did they offer you any training or careers advice or anything like that?
Not really, no.
Did you consider going into the police?
Well, I had two uncles in the police force, two of my father's brothers. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, I've done a lot of police work, you know. But now, I wish I had now, gone into the police. I don't think I'd have any trouble being an ex-military policeman, really.
What do you think your military service taught you? What did it leave you with? I mean, it was a lot of your formative years were spent in the military, but what do you think it actually taught you about life?
Well, quite a lot, really. Because before I went into the army, I hadn't been anywhere. I didn't know what Gloucester looked like properly, you know. And it really opened my eyes. Because when you were with lads from big cities, and they used to tell stories of what they used to do, I used to keep quiet because I hadn't done anything. So it broadened my horizon considerably. Yeah.
And did it teach you a way of living, you know, a way of presenting yourself and a confidence, really?
Oh, yes, yes. And it always gives you that extra bit of smartness, you know. You took more pride in yourself because you had to in the army. Well, in the military, police, exactly. I mean, you never had to have anything wrong at all. Before you were out on street patrol, you were checked, and if anything wrong, you had to get it right before you went out. You know, it was that bad. So discipline was first and foremost.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, it's been a fascinating story. I don't know whether you've got anything to add. I think any particular stories you've remembered or anything about your time in the services, or
it's been
pretty comprehensive.
Yeah. I left the guard. My father died when I was at Winchester, the first job at gardening I had. Father died, and the actual the colonel came to me one day and said, because my father worked for a colonel. And the head gardener came to me and he said, I've had a phone call from Colonel. He said, he wants to know if you would like to take your father's job. But I refused. Yeah. I wanted to come out of it altogether, out of the garden. And I finally finished up working for OCI in a nylon factory, which I did 25 years.
Did you?
Yeah.
And you enjoyed that, didn't you?
I did, yes.
What was it, the comradeship, like the military, or a lot of people working together?
That's right, yeah, yeah. You were so alone when you were a gardener. You never saw a soul all day long, only the birds and the bees. Mm. Yes, it was nice. I had to travel to work because it was at Brockworth. And I totally enjoyed that.
Yeah.
When I went there first, I never thought I'd stay.
No. And somehow the army had fitted you for that, hadn't it? You were used to working with a lot of people.
Oh, yes.
A structured organisation.
That's right, yes, yes.
Yeah, excellent. Well, it's been a fascinating story. Thank you very much indeed. And I'll say, Ken Ryland, end of Reel 5.